Now is the time for Portlandians, show number 8. Hey folks, thanks for tuning in to Portlandians again. This is Sam. I've got another completely different style of show for you this time. I went to a great event called the Hawthorne Hostel Speak Up. It was the first in a series of monthly discussions. They had a who's who list of local cultural icons, I guess you could say. People that are very knowledgeable on their topic, and they give their opinion on it, and then it's open to the audience. So for this event, the topics were: what is an American? Economics demystified, the great cultural shift, veganism, plutocracy versus the people, visions for the future, and whether to work within the system or outside the system. Some of the speakers were Trey Arrow, Mark Lakeman, Joel Magnuson, Mia Van Meter, Satya Vayu. Who put the event on were Michael Schultz, Tom Roos, and Cascadia Unite. So what I did was each topic ended up being roughly a half an hour. So I'm going to make each topic into one separate show. So for today's show, the speakers are Mia Van Meter, Satya Vayu. Your MC, who will introduce them and also the event, is Sid Monroe. And there's a little bit of people from the audience talking off mic and stuff. I'll try to jump in when I can. Sometimes it's better for me to not do that, so you'll see that. It gets better as the event goes on in future shows. People end up asking questions on mic, which makes more sense. It works better. It'll get better. The first show is a little... you'll hear some stuff off mic, or you won't hear it. That's kind of the problem. But I'll jump in if I need to. So here it is. Mia Van Meter, Satya Vayu. First, you'll hear Sid Monroe. Here we go. Within the system or outside the system? Which is better? Let's talk.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight, we are not just going to witness, but we'll also take part in one of the most imminently vanishing, yet most important aspects of civic participation within a democratic republic, and that is public debate. And that's one of the best. I did a lot of research on what exactly this event is, and it can best be characterized, I believe, as a public debate. And that means that these aren't experts from on high that are here to extol to you, grand insights that you might one day grasp. These are people just like you and me who have ideas and opinions and, some thought out positions that they'd like to bring to the forum here for us all to discuss. I think we've got echo chambers of media bombarding us from all sides, regurgitating talking points that are designed to keep people from having to scrutinize their beliefs. And it's no wonder that political and public discourse has gotten so boring. But websites and blogs often complete the cylinder of mirrors around us so that a person needn't ever seriously consider a new point of view. It's simply given a label like socialist or religious, and no further thought or effort is applied because everybody knows it's ridiculous. Mark Twain said, "A man cannot be comfortable without his own approval." And since we have access to so much information now, we need to not only be able to discern truth, but to avoid confirmation bias. And we must regularly expose ourselves to views that are outside of our own comfort zone and be able to examine our own beliefs in new ways. Mark Twain also said, "Loyalty to petrified opinion never yet broke a chain or freed a human soul." I am here tonight because I believe it is a great and important challenge to disagree without demonization. Once we can get past the pettier aspects of our disagreements, we can put our unique gifts and perspectives to work alongside one another to tackle the bigger issues that transcend trivial shades of difference. In this way, it's not so easy for us to be divided and rendered politically impotent by the powers that be. Tonight, if someone says something that you think you don't understand, or maybe you think you do understand, but it just sounds stupid, please give them the benefit of the doubt. Let them know how it did come across to you and give them an opportunity to rephrase what they've said in a way that maybe you can come to understand it. And give yourself the space to try to take in the information in a new way without already thinking that you must know where they're coming from. Because no one here, from where I'm standing, is stupid. And remember that it's all about framing. And sometimes we need to just step back in order to get that proper perspective. My two heroes, Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela, were able to achieve great things by working with rather than demonizing their enemies. And I trust that tonight will be an important first step towards bringing us all together towards similar goals. Our first speaker tonight is Mia Van Meter. And she's lived in Portland for 22 years. She's been active in an array of alternative institutions, usually as a behind-the-scenes administrative geek, according to herself. And she's going to be up here tonight talking about working within the system. So let's hear it from Mia Van Meter. And let's also hear it for Satya Vayu. And I'll give an introduction about him as well. They're going to be discussing different pieces of the same coin, different sides of the same coin. Satya Vayu has lived in Portland for 10 years. He came here originally to work with forest defenders, protecting old-growth forest. Before that, he lived as a monk in Japan and other Asian countries for 5 years. Since living in Portland, he lives without income and works with Food Not Bombs and teaches medication and Tai Chi. And I think that's Tai Chi. I pronounced it wrong. And giving talks about simple living.
So, my name is Mia, and I'm going to leave defining the system to the question phase, if people don't know what it is. I define working with this within the system probably in a pretty alternative way. But when I first moved to Portland 22 years ago with my husband and our three small children, we just drove in from New Hampshire along 84, pulled into People's Co-op, walked in, and bought a membership. That was the most important thing to do in your first 5 minutes in Portland. And working within the co-op, which is something I've been doing since then, I'm on the board now again for a second stint. I was on the staff for a couple periods, served on committees. That really is like within the system, because a cooperative is a legally sanctioned way to incorporate. The co-op follows standard business practices and is competing in a market with commercial interests. But it's really a place where individual people, can learn a lot of skills. Like at the co-op, when they hire people in, the job and the amount of responsibility that the staff people do isn't based on, their pay isn't based on that. The work that they do is they take it on because they want to learn new skills, stretch themselves, learn how to make a business work, learn how to make an economy work. And the co-op is part of a really large and self-conscious and articulate national movement where we're trying to create an alternative economy which is owned by the people, consumers or workers, And so it's within the system in the sense that we follow the laws that were created, but it's working to change the system from within. The system I recognize is based, in my opinion, this huge patriarchal capitalist system that we have really asks people to choose death over and over. You know, it's like choosing exploitation of people or the destruction of our environment or being willing not to have your true needs met so that you'll be a good consumer and buy, 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 buy. And so I recognize, you know, the really deep problems in the system, but I still think that it's a lot to be gained from working within it. Another example of working within the system is to work for and with a nonprofit. A nonprofit is a similar niche in the economy where you can declare a purpose, and if the IRS finds it acceptable, then you can raise income while carrying out that purpose, and that income isn't taxed, which means that the taxes don't go into the big military-industrial complex. Also, people can give donations to the nonprofit, which are used for this purpose, and then they can decrease the taxes that they're paying individually. So this is all sanctioned, all part of the system, but if the purpose of the nonprofit is one that can work to create social change, then it's working from within the system. Another place that I've found opportunity to work within the system is in the public schools. I have four kids, and they've had various experiences with public schools over the years. I've served on the site council for Franklin High School and Trillium Charter School, and was temporarily the interim director for a small charter school that didn't actually make it beyond its first year. But when I was involved in those things, I found out that in the Multnomah Educational Service District and in the Portland Public Schools, which are huge, big bureaucracies, there are pockets, you know, like departments in there that think that charter schools are a really great experiment and can really come up with some solutions to solve some of these problems. And then there are whole other departments, especially in Portland Public Schools, the place, the people that like actually run the buildings and get to decide what to do with empty ones. And they don't like charter schools. They think that they are a threat to the whole system. So it's, you know, it's really interesting how you can, you know, overall, I think that the questions that are being asked in education and health care reform and, you know, are, you know, they're just not even coming close to asking fundamentally the important questions. And so that makes it frustrating to work inside the system. But another way that you can benefit by working inside the system is that you learn personal skills. And if we want to set up anything approaching an alternative government, a shadow government, alternative institutions, working within some, you know, like a co-op or a nonprofit or volunteering in the schools, is a way that you can learn some of these challenging questions. How do you make things work? You know, how do you run a meeting? How do you set an agenda? How do you get people to agree? How do you do a budget? You know, these are all skills that you can learn from inside. Especially an opportunity for learning is consensus. Being in a group that makes decisions by consensus. It's a place where I've had lots of learning, and I might have just messed up my timer. So let me just say the last two things I wanted to say. They're in electoral politics, especially difficult place to work. The, you know, the Democrat-Republican thing is just not really happening. And but there is an opportunity in Portland, and I'll just say this quickly. The once every 10 years, they review the Portland's the charter that creates the city. You know, it's like the bottom line thing. And they appoint like 20 people who are on this commission who are reviewing the charter. And on Monday at noon, it's on Facebook, you can go and testify at their hearing where they're taking information about what questions should they be looking at. And there's a group of us who are pushing for them to look at something called instant runoff voting, which would make room for more third party kind of stuff. So that's inside the system. Yes.
Hi, I'm Satya. And I think when this, I wasn't in on the original organization of this, but I guess the original idea was to have kind of some series of debates as well as individual talks. So we were the debate between inside and outside the system, but then we realized it's not really so much of a debate because we both think that both sides can be used. And obviously Mia's vision of working in the system is along the line of creating a new system anyway, so it's not standing up for the viability of our system. So I support and work with all the mechanisms that Mia talked about. But I'm supposed to talk about working outside the system, again, this system, which we don't know what it means, and of course you're always in some kind of system or other. But a big part of my life, I think, has to do with living and modeling a lifestyle where we don't have to cooperate with the things that we might not feel are so wholesome that maybe a lot of us think that we have to cooperate with. We all, including myself, cooperate with some of the overarching system, political system or economic system to some degree. But I've experimented with my life to see how little we can be involved in that if we have problems with it. The dominant paradigm of the public discourse of this country, which I wouldn't really call a public discourse, it's more of a TV and print media discourse, is that voting is our main way to participate, and the realm of political debate is what you hear on TV. And most of us here, of course, don't agree with that. But when you're convinced that enough of the system is so corrupt, fundamentally, in the very structure of it, that you can't make that your main focus, it's good to know that there are other avenues to go to. I was having a discussion about electoral politics with my housemate the other day, and that was quite a debate. So Mia didn't advocate for electoral politics so much, so I can't get all lively with her, but about that anyway. But we got quite lively in the room, and he made the point that he's actually here, but I don't see him in the audience right now. But there you are. He made the point that sometimes if people get very disillusioned with politics, oh, both the Democrats and Republicans are terrible, and they're both co-opted, and you know, voting is a very minimal way of participating, that sometimes people might just get discouraged and decide not to be an activist or not to get involved in anything in the public sphere. And I guess that is true for some people, and I think that's very unfortunate. So what I'd like to inspire people to realize that there's so many ways to get involved in directly creating a new system, even though we're so much surrounded by the physical presence of a dominant economic system and a dominant physical system, even. And the main way to make this easy or easier is through community. So to me, community is really, it's not the whole picture. There's a lot of personal change we have to undergo, and I spent years doing spiritual practice in an Asian tradition that originally evolved very much outside of the system, although as most religions go on for a couple hundred years, they get very co-opted by the system as well. But the idea was, the mythos was of that spiritual training that systems human beings set up when they get involved with power and money are almost always going to be corrupt. And it's possible to find a community and create a new life almost within any system. Of course, there's always times where you'll get physical attacks in certain situations, but mostly there's ways to avoid that. So because of that personal training, I felt very much like when I came back to live in the States, that I really wanted to see if I could live some of those ideals in an environment that wasn't as set up for it. And I've managed to live without income, well, really without a real money-making job for many years before I got to Portland, but been 10 years in Portland without that. And I use money very minimally. I have some friends that don't use money. There's some books about some of these people. They're around the world. There's new networks about them. It's very interesting to read how their different strategies. But the hardest thing is the fact that most of the people around you, even if they're sympathetic with some of your ideals, will be very uncomfortable with leaving the system that we're all so used to. And it really, to do it alone is very difficult. because as human beings, we're social and we need support of other people. So forming community to do things together where you find new networks of sharing, both food sharing, food growing, all the essential things we need. Housing is a big one that's very entrenched in the economic system, but there's so much empty space, there's so many empty rooms and houses, and if people understand what it is to share a little more and understand reciprocity beyond the money economy, there's wonderful vistas for that that we can develop as communities. So Food Not Bombs is one small effort. Well, it's pretty big around the world, but here in Portland, it's one small example of people trying to gather food that would otherwise go to waste and share it with each other. And people realize there's so much food to be had that I really don't have to worry about that economically so much. And then it's also a way to kind of meet people, and maybe you can learn where you could live for cheap, who you can live with, all these kind of things. But we need a lot more connections like that if we really want to create a new culture within the shell of the old as it goes through its death throes, one would hope anyway. How drawn out they are, we don't know. So to me, I really would like to, this is the challenge I give myself and the challenge that I'd like to spread to other people is, how can you live your life the most beautiful way that you can, each and every moment, each and every day, and not make the compromises with your heart? You have to make compromises with other people's desires and likes and dislikes, but not making compromises with your heart as much as you can. So when I decided that, you know, I felt cars are very destructive to the world, pollution, global warming, it's a big issue, maybe the big issue. I decided not to drive, and eventually after some years, I decided not to ride in cars anymore because I just didn't feel so good about that. And then, you're faced with a situation that I can't go so far. And then you have to ask yourself, do I have to go so far? Do I have to make so many trips? So it's very interesting. 1 minute. Finished. Okay. Using plastic, getting local stuff, all these issues that we try to do. It's amazing how far you can go and still have a wonderful, rich life, eating rich food, having rich friends, doing wonderful things. So that's the vision that I would encourage people to explore more and to connect with others, to create community, to explore that together so we don't have to do it alone.
Okay, I have a question for you, Seth. I'm curious about your attitude towards money. Like, if people made a barter economy that was more, you know, that's still abstract, but it might spread out over a region, would that be something you participate in? And then if there were, like, a piece of paper that was representing the value from the barter system, like, where does the edge?
That's a really good question. A lot of people in our alternative community are really into the barter system, and I do feel there's a big advantage to it over the money system, primarily that it can't be as abused as much. Because the money system was really created so that you can accumulate a lot of wealth, so much wealth that you don't have to store it. You don't have to have things, and you don't have to carry things and give them to someone else. You can have the equivalence of huge amounts of things in your pocket. So, of course, you can have the distribution of wealth can get much more radically unequal. Although it can get pretty unequal with things themselves. If you've ever seen that wonderful book about people around the world and all their possessions, they bring all their possessions out in front of their house and stand and pose for a photograph. Has anyone seen that book? So, like, you see the Americans and then you see some other countries and it's just absurd how much stuff. But, of course, the real wealthy people, most, you can't see it in their physical stuff because it's just numbers. And so bartering makes that more simple and also just makes more personal interactions and things you've made. But to me, it's still the same idea that we're not sharing freely. There's still a level of anxiety about, a level of competition in it. Like, oh my God, I got to get some good thing to trade for this other good thing. I don't have enough good things. I have to go maybe work for money and then be able to get that new thing or spend a long time working for it and then trade. And there's a sense of competition between the two people. Is this good enough for this? So it's very different from what I call, and a lot of people call, the gift economy, which is, you know, most anthropologists would agree is the way human beings lived for about 95% of our history, where we didn't compete or try to measure up to each other to trade things, but we just shared what we had freely. And we trusted that we'll receive what we need. And we're not used to growing up that way. We think that, well, if I just, you know, give from my heart, you know, just without expecting anything in return, I'm going to get taken advantage of. But to me, that's a conditioning we've been taught to believe that makes us very afraid of each other and really makes us afraid of entering into open community and open sharing. So I try not to barter. I mean, I don't, consciously anyway. And just try to live in what I call gift economy. So I try to offer whatever I can offer, which is not so much material stuff, although sometimes includes material stuff, whatever skills I have, whatever I can do to help people. And if people are moved to offer me stuff because of what I've offered or not because of what I've offered, because of some other reason, then that's good too. And there's this incredible sense of trusting the universe to take care of us, which I think is part of most indigenous cultures and maybe most traditional cultures as well. Traditional meaning, not necessarily indigenous, maybe agricultural, but old style. So I found that it's very possible and a very beautiful way to live, but challenging and different than what we're used to. And that was a long answer, so sorry.
So that was Mia asking her question to Satya, and here is Satya returning the favor.
Mia was too agreeable to me. I mean, you know, I like co-ops, and I think I still vote. I don't usually vote for the two parties because I think that's a total sham and just a charade, but, you know, I think we should increase voting. And so I don't have any question about what she said, really. So I would turn my questions over to people from the audience, but if Mia might have more questions.
So the question was, how long has Satya lived without money?
There's various levels of how hardcore you are about living without money. So I have a very good friend, Suelo, who was just in Portland recently, and he doesn't actually hold any money. If someone gives him money inadvertently, he'll turn it down, but if they stick it in his pocket or something, which sometimes happens, or in his bag, he has to get rid of it by midnight that day. So he doesn't have the sense of accumulating. So, you know, I'm not moneyless, according to his model. But I haven't made a real income since my last job was, well, this will give away how old I am, but my last job was in 91, the year I graduated college. So then I lived in some centers that gave you like a stipend. So I did save up enough money because I didn't have any expenses to buy an airline ticket and go to Asia in case people are wondering how I got there. I don't take planes anymore, but I did at that time. So and the stipends, when I was in Asia, the teacher just kind of decides to give people money when he's in the mood. And so, you know, I accumulated some more money. Since Portland, which is, I came back to the States in 2000, and I've been pretty much in Portland since 2001, and I haven't made any income since then, except for gifts. So in the tradition that I trained in Asia, it's very important that that you receive gifts when they're offered, and that's why I don't turn down money. And but it's all gifts, and then I just use it for food that I have trouble finding for free. I mean, most food I can find for free, but some is a little difficult. So.
At this point, someone from the audience asks, what do you think about each other's beliefs?
I actually used to be really into electoral politics when I was in college, and then my early years after that. And I met some people that, Catholic workers that were doing civil disobedience against nuclear weapons. And I was like intensely angry with them for wasting their time and not having a goal and attracting attention and making the peace movement look silly. And I mean, my reasons went on and on. And I was so upset about it that it was obviously really important to me, and I eventually had this big shift where I realized that living from your own center, you know, is really what you came here to do. And so that's sort of like a maturation that you go through, probably. And so from that point of view, yes, Satya is not ever saying, all of you should be just like me, you know? It's not what he's saying. And he's saying, like, I'm getting really close to knowing who I am, and I find that, like, really exciting, you know? And I think I'm different than that, so I'm a different person and the way I am. And so I want to get close to finding out who I am. That's just,
yeah, and I feel like some people say that it's you know, for a big cultural shift that we need people working on many different levels. And in a sense, that's true, but it's not so much that we need that or it has to look any one way. It's just that that's the way it's going to be. So, like, it's not really much of a discussion. I mean, everyone has a different background and they come from a different place and they are inspired to work on different things. And they're all helpful. You know, all the structures are helpful that are you know, really trying to go in a good direction. I mean, so I have a certain role that's inspiring to me. What I really like to communicate to a broad audience is that we should all be able to find or look for support to help us find a way to live that really inspires us and is beautiful and doesn't feel burdensome and doesn't feel like we're compromised and having to do something just to get money and wasting our life. Because to just, I mean, from my spiritual practice, as I'm sure a lot of you also have this inspiration, life is an incredible, magical, wonderful gift. And to spend hours of it every day doing something that doesn't really inspire you is really sad to me. I mean, we all do that. We all have habits, and I'm still doing things that don't inspire me, and then I'm like, why did I do that? but that's the process of growing, I think. So I think that can go for everyone. That can be a universal. Find what really inspires you, what you don't feel burdened and compromised with. But that's going to be different things for different people, and I think that's wonderful. I mean, people who know me well and really do want to live simply, and we talk about it, and I get very familiar with them, you know, I'm known to be pretty pushy. And saying, you know, do you need to buy that plastic? Do you need to buy that package thing? Do you need to get in that car? All that kind of stuff. And I do feel happy when people feel like, I don't need to do that, you know. But I don't expect that large numbers of people are going to be that radically, going to change that radically and that soon. And to save our planet from the catastrophes that we're facing, we don't all need to do that radically and that soon. But we do all need to make big steps. From wherever we are, we need to make steps. We need to be using less resources more communally, as all stuff that you agree with. So I'm happy when anyone is making a step from wherever they are, despite the fact that people who know me well know me to be pretty pushy. I do, he says, do I know anything about bioregionalism? And that's a big, rich topic. Generally, I'm, you know, very in support of localization, and I think that's necessary, and I don't even get in cars now, so it's it's a necessity for me. But it's an interesting and big topic, and I think it's beyond the scope of what we have time for, because I have some, like, I was very inspired by Gary Snyder at a certain point in my life, reading a lot of what he was one of the early bioregionalist theorists in the 50s and 60s, and I have a lot of disagreements about, you know, whether just staying in one place really makes you a hardcore aware of your environmental impact or not. There's some people that are really aware and travel a lot, and there's some people that stay in one place and are not aware. So it's an interesting and rich topic. But I think jumping on a plane and going everywhere all the time is, you know, not a good thing for most people. There's always exceptions.
So someone from the crowd here asked a very long, rambling, kind of confusing question, which you can tell by the reaction from the speakers, but I think they do a good job of salvaging it here. Here goes.
That was a long question. He's basically saying, is socialism okay? No. I mean, should people have what they need rather than being equally? So are you saying they might need money? Oh.
I mean, I don't think there should be any effort to somehow make everyone look the same or do the same thing or, you know, eat the same food. And I mean, we all just have different, besides the work we do, we have different bodies and different needs and different likes. And, you know, but if we're working in community, if we have scales of communication that are actually personal, like this is about, you know, as big as you can get, in my view. Most tribes in indigenous cultures through history were maxed out at about 150. We're not there yet, but that's the people you actually can get to know and talk to. Then you can get to know their needs and understand their different perspectives, and you don't have to make cross-the-board blanket statements about huge segments of population, which is always going to be problematic, you know. So if we're understanding of each other, we realize, you know, yeah, this person needs a different amount of food than this person, and this person needs something else, and we can make a lot of personal changes. So I think scale is very important.
So the question is, how do you deal with power in the gift economy?
Another big subject. We have to like define power and go into a lot of issues there. But just to say something that can be fairly brief. Again, it's about communication, I think. Power is abused when communication falls apart, when people are not heard. There's always going to be people who are louder, like me, and you know, more willing to speak, kind of dominant personalities, and other people that might be quieter, and they can end up getting not respected. So I think we need structures in community. If we're going to have community working with gift economy, we need structures that we have elders that are trusted by the community that do teachings, how to communicate, how to listen, how to do process, how to do consensus process, which is a real deep learning curve, actually, to make it work well. And facilitators that know how to let the people who aren't heard be heard. But all that works much, much better on smaller scales than big scales. So the smaller we get in our communities, and the more we meet and communicate with each other, the more we can deal with some of those problems. But I also don't think we should have any kind of illusion that those problems aren't going to exist. I mean, that's just part of being human. They happen. But I think you don't get the massive inequalities of power in small communities that have a common goal of not accumulating wealth that you do in our dominant society. Yeah.
My favorite inside the system thing I've done is actually what Satya just mentioned, which was learning consensus. I first ran into it at a co-op that I volunteered for when I was 16 in Pittsburgh and did my research senior thesis on it, and they use it at People's Co-op, and I lived in a community of 50 people where we used it, and just practicing consensus and like looking at issues like Svati brought up, like power and people finding their voice. Not in our culture, we tend to think that if someone sounds really definite and if they are sort of louder, then they're probably right. Which is just like mystifying to me, because I usually actually assume they're wrong, but but that's not cool either. But seeking out that voice, the ways to find voices. In fact, I'm actually working on this like right now, writing up this whole big thing about consensus, and we're going to be doing a class on it on Tuesday nights over at HARP, which is Stephanie's here somewhere. So this will be going through the fall, a free class where, among other things, we're defining this whole question about consensus and what you can learn and how it can bring in the new culture and what the new culture is. And yeah, that's my favorite topic.
I just want to say briefly that I think Mia and I are both going to be here for the rest of it. So if you have more questions, there's time to talk and stuff like that. And also, if you want to know about where meditation is offered for free and food is offered for free.
So there it is. Part one of the Hawthorne Hostel Speak Up. First event, August 2011. Mia Van Meter, Satya Vayu, your MC is Sid Monroe. So yeah, if you want to check out one of these, they will be held at the Hawthorne Hostel, 30th and Hawthorne, Southeast Portland, portlandhostel.org. Their number is 503-236-3380. It's a $5 to $10 suggested donation, but no one is turned away. It says, bring your own cup. However, drinks and food are provided. Next show for me on this, from this event, will be, the speaker will be Joel Magnuson. He's an economics professor at Portland State University. And his topic is going to be Economics Demystified. Check it out. Talk to you soon.